Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something that's, well, completely changed the game for business and tech, cloud computing. We're diving into Nayan B. Ruparelia's analysis, and right off the bat, he says it's not just about renting servers somewhere else.
Exactly. He argues, quite convincingly, I think, that it's a massive economic and strategic shift. He calls it the industrialization of IT. It's way more than just a tech upgrade. It fundamentally changes how we buy, use, and manage computing power.
That's a really important distinction. But why should someone, outside of a tech role really care about this?
Because it flips the whole economic model on its head. Think about old school IT. Huge upfront costs, right? Capital expenditure or CapEx. You bought big, expensive machines. The cloud changes that to operational expenditure, OpEx. You pay as you go, like a utility. It's flexible, scalable. That affects everything. Business planning, how fast you can move.
Oh, I remember those CapEx days. You had to guess your peak demand, maybe for like one day a year.
Right, and the rest of the time, all that expensive gear was just sitting there, mostly idle. Wasting money.
A huge waste.
Totally. It was inherently inefficient, really rigid. The cloud fixes that mismatch between, well, static infrastructure and dynamic business needs. It gives you agility, scalability. Ruparelia points out you can grow almost instantly, none of those months-long waits for new hardware.
Okay, so who is Nayan B. Ruparelia? What's his background?
He's a very experienced software architect,
yes.
A technology consultant. His background isn't purely academic. It's practical, hands-on. He's designed and built large, complex systems in the real world. So he's seen firsthand how the tech choices impact the business side.
That sounds like a really valuable perspective, bridging the gap between the big strategic picture and the technical nuts and bolts.
Absolutely. And that's who he writes for. IT professionals, sure, but also students, business leaders, anyone who needs to grasp why the cloud matters strategically, not just what it is technically. His book covers the tech, the security, the economics. It's pretty comprehensive.
Right. So let's get into the book's core argument. Ruparelia says it's a true paradigm shift, breaking down old walls between who provides tech and who uses it.
That's the heart of it, yeah. The democratization of technology. His book frames the cloud as this economic revolution offering really unprecedented agility and cost effectiveness. Think about it. The kind of serious computing power, the global reach, the advanced tools that only huge corporations could afford. Now, a tiny startup, maybe just two people, can access basically the same stuff.
That's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it, when you think about the history of computing power? A startup having parity with a Fortune 500 company on day one.
It really is. And the book lays out this transformation very logically. It starts with the limitations of older models, mainframes, client server, and then moves into defining the cloud, the service models like IaaS, PaaS, SaaS, different ways to deploy it, and then looks at key things like security and what's coming next, like serverless.
Okay, let's dig into that core problem the cloud solved. You mentioned the inefficiency, the CapEx burden. But it was also that awful choice, wasn't it? Either over-provisioning, buying way too much stuff.
Which was incredibly wasteful.
Or under-provisioning, where your systems just crash right when you need them most, like during a big sale.
Exactly. That instability and waste just weren't sustainable. So to really pin down what makes the cloud different, Ruparelia leans on the official NIST definition, National Institute of Standards and Technology. It outlines five essential characteristics that together define this new model.
Okay, the NIST five. What are these key ingredients that make it work like a utility?
Right. They define the experience for you, the user. First is on-demand self-service. You can get computing resources automatically when you need them without waiting for someone to manually set it up.
No more filling out forms and waiting weeks.
Exactly. Second, broad network access. You get to everything through standard methods, like your web browser, from anywhere.
Makes sense. And the third one sounds crucial for efficiency. Resource pooling. Multi-tenancy, right?
Correct. The provider pools enormous amounts of resources, servers, storage, networks, and dynamically assigns them to lots of different customers as needed. It's like carpooling for computers, but way more sophisticated.
So things are rarely sitting idle.
Precisely. And that pooling makes the fourth point possible, rapid elasticity. Services can scale up or, just as importantly, scale down almost instantly. To you, the resources seem practically infinite.
And the fifth point is what enables that pay-as-you-go model, measured service.
That's the one. Everything you use is tracked, monitored, reported. You can see exactly what you're consuming. It's like your electricity meter. You pay for what you actually use.
And this measured service, this utility model, lets us choose how much control versus convenience we want. Ruparelli explains this with the three main service models, IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS.
Yeah, they're like layers of abstraction offering different trade-offs. At the bottom, you have ISS, Infrastructure as a Service. Think Amazon EC2 or Google Compute Engine. Ruparelli uses the analogy of leasing a plot of raw land. You get the basic infrastructure, servers, storage, networking, but you manage almost everything on top. The operating system, the applications, the data, a lot of the security. Maximum flexibility, but also maximum responsibility.
Okay, raw land. Then moving up a level is PaaS, Platform as a Service.
Right. This is more like renting a fully equipped workshop. Think Heroku or Google App Engine. The provider manages the underlying infrastructure and the operating systems, databases, middleware. You just focus on writing and deploying your application code. You have less control over the underlying bits than IS, but it speeds up development significantly.
And the top layer, the most convenient one, is SaaS, Software as a Service. Things like Gmail, Salesforce, Microsoft 365.
That's the fully serviced apartment analogy. You just log in and use the software. The provider handles absolutely everything behind the scenes, the infrastructure, the platform, the application itself, updates, maintenance. Super convenient, but you have the least control.
So you choose the layer based on your needs and technical capability. Makes sense. Now, besides how you use the cloud, Ruparelli also talks about where it runs the deployment models. Public, private, hybrid.
Yes, public cloud is the standard model, AWS, Azure, GCP shared infrastructure. Private cloud is dedicated infrastructure for a single organization, maybe for security or compliance reasons. Community cloud is shared among a few specific organizations, but the hybrid model is really interesting strategically, especially for bigger companies.
Right, you hear about cloud bursting with hybrid. Can you break that down? What is it and why would, say, a big retailer use it?
Cloud bursting is a smart use of that elasticity we talked about. Imagine a company keeps its regular operations, maybe sensitive customer data, running in its secure private cloud. But then, boom, Black Friday hits. Demand spikes unpredictably. Instead of crashing their private systems, they automatically burst the extra workload. Maybe just the website browsing part, not the payment processing, out to the public cloud.
Ah, so they tap into the public cloud's massive scale just for that peak period.
Exactly. They pay for that extra capacity only when they absolutely need it, then scale back down. It's the best of both worlds. Control for sensitive stuff, elasticity for unpredictable demand.
It almost sounds like magic. But what's the actual technology making all this pooling and elasticity possible? The invisible engine.
The key technology, and Ruparelli emphasizes this, is virtualization. At its core, there's a piece of software called a hypervisor. What the hypervisor does is allow one single physical server to run multiple isolated virtual machines, or VMs. Each VM acts like a complete separate computer with its own operating system and applications.
So that's how they slice up the physical hardware efficiently.
Precisely. It allows providers to securely share that massive hardware pool among many tenants, achieving huge economies of scale. Virtualization is really the bedrock technology enabling cloud economics.
Okay, so we have flexibility, scalability, but it's all pointless if it's not secure. How does the cloud change the security game? This sounds critical.
It is absolutely critical, and this is probably the most important reality check in the book, the shared responsibility model. You have to understand this. It's basically a contract dividing up the security tasks. The cloud provider, like AWS, Microsoft, Google, is responsible for security of the cloud.
Security of the cloud, what does that mean?
That means securing the physical stuff, the data centers, the hardware, the core networking, the hypervisors. They protect the fundamental infrastructure.
Okay, so they secure the foundation, but the customer.
Yeah.
That's us. We're responsible for security in the cloud.
Exactly. Security in the cloud is your job. That includes securing your data, managing who has access, identity management, configuring firewalls, patching your operating systems and applications if you're using IaaS PaaS, and crucially, how you configure the cloud services themselves. Ruparelli warns, and the data backs this up, that customer misconfiguration is the number one cause of cloud breaches.
Wow. So it's not usually hackers breaking into Amazon's data centers? It's users accidentally leaving a door unlocked, digitally speaking, like leaving a storage bucket open to the public internet.
That's statistically the biggest risk. You left the configuration setting wrong. The provider did their job securing the infrastructure, but you misconfigured the service built on top of it.
That really shifts the focus, doesn't it? Less about physical walls, more about managing identities, access, and configuration settings correctly.
It requires constant vigilance and a different skill set. Speaking of the landscape, let's quickly touch on the major players. You've got AWS, Amazon Web Services, the pioneer and still the market leader. Then Microsoft Azure, which is very strong in the enterprise space, often leveraging existing Microsoft relationships and really good at hybrid cloud setups. And Google Cloud Platform, or GCP, known for its strengths in data analytics, AI, machine learning, and especially Kubernetes, which we'll get to.
And Ruparelia highlights Netflix as a prime example of using the cloud effectively, right? How did they leverage this elasticity?
Oh, Netflix is the classic case study. They famously migrated their entire streaming infrastructure from their own data centers to AWS. This allowed them to handle their massive, global, and incredibly spiky traffic loads. Think about when a new season of a hit show drops, millions of people start streaming simultaneously.
Yeah, the demand must be insane.
Totally unpredictable peaks. Using AWS's elasticity, they could scale up capacity by thousands of servers almost instantly to meet that demand, ensuring a smooth experience, and then just as importantly, scale back down immediately afterward to save costs. They simply couldn't have done that affordably with fixed, owned hardware.
That really drives home the power of elasticity. Looking forward, Ruparelia also touches on the next waves of abstraction, serverless computing, or FaaS, functions as a service.
Yeah, serverless pushes the abstraction even further. With FaaS, you don't even think about servers or operating systems anymore. You just write small pieces of code functions that do specific tasks. The cloud provider automatically runs the function when it's triggered and scales it as needed. And the billing gets incredibly granular. You often pay only for the actual milliseconds your code is executing. It's getting closer to a true dial tone utility for computing.
Wow. And related to managing applications at scale, there are containers, Docker being the famous one, and Kubernetes to manage them.
Right. Containers are a way to package up an application and all its dependencies, libraries, configuration files into a single, lightweight, portable unit. They're much more efficient and faster to start up than full virtual machines. And Kubernetes is essentially an orchestration system for containers. When you have hundreds or thousands of containers running an application, Kubernetes automates deploying them, scaling them, managing network connections, handling failures. It provides resilience and consistency at massive scale. It's become the de facto standard for managing containerized applications.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here, from the basic economics to virtualization to future trends. Let's try to distill the big strategic messages Ruparelia wants us to take away.
I think the first and maybe the most fundamental is that mental shift. Cloud is a utility, not a product. Thinking in terms of consumption, OpEx, rather than ownership, CapEx, changes everything.
Right, that economic driver. What else?
Second, the democratization of technology. That powerful idea we discussed, leveling the playing field, allowing small innovators to access world-class tools and infrastructure right away.
Huge for startups.
Definitely. Third is how elasticity drives agility. The ability to scale instantly, up or down, lets businesses experiment more freely. You can try new things, fail fast without huge sunk costs, and instantly scale up the things that work. It matches business speed to market speed.
And fourth, he really stresses strategic choice over dogma. It's not about blindly throwing everything into the public cloud.
No, absolutely not. The smart question is always, which specific workload fits best in which model, public, private, hybrid? It has to be driven by business needs, security requirements, costs, not just following a trend.
A pragmatic approach.
And finally, the necessary evolution of the IT professional. The job isn't about racking physical servers anymore. It's shifting towards managing services, automation, cloud security engineering, cost optimization, embracing that whole DevOps culture.
That point about OpEx and agility is powerful.
Yeah.
But isn't there a risk? CapEx might be inflexible, but it's predictable. OpEx sounds like costs could spiral if you're not careful.
That's a very real danger, and Ruparelia absolutely highlights it. OpEx flexibility comes with a responsibility for cost governance. If you don't actively monitor your usage, tag resources, set budgets, and turn things off when they're not needed.
That utility bill could get enormous fast.
Exactly. Elasticity means you can spin up vast resources quickly, but that also means you can overspend very quickly if you lack discipline and visibility. Vigilance is key.
Okay. The book certainly has some memorable ways of framing these ideas. Let's maybe share a few of those core concepts that really stick.
Yeah, the most famous one really captures that economic shift. Stop thinking of computing as something you own, like a car, and start thinking of it as something you consume, like electricity from a power grid.
That's a great analogy. Plug in, pay for what you use. And I like the one that manages expectations about complexity. The cloud doesn't eliminate IT complexity, It redistributes it and changes who manages what aspects of the technology stack.
Right. It's a crucial reality check. The work doesn't vanish, it just changes form and focus.
And the security one is so important. Cloud security is a contract of shared responsibility. The provider secures the foundation, but you are the architect and security guard for the house you build on top of it.
You build the house, you lock the doors and windows. That's probably the most critical operational takeaway.
So let's make this really concrete for someone listening. How does Rupert Aurelius' framework help, say, an entrepreneur?
For entrepreneurs, it's practically a launch playbook. They can use SaaS for things like CRM and email, PaaS to rapidly develop their unique application, maybe some IaaS for a specific heavy lifting, all with minimal upfront cash. It dramatically lowers the barrier to entry and speeds up time to market.
And for managers or leaders in larger companies?
The framework thinking in terms of OpEx, elasticity, the different service and deployment models gives them the tools to evaluate vendor proposals critically. They can ask the right questions to make sure IT investments actually support business goals, like agility or cost savings, rather than just buying the newest tech. Think about that retail example again. The book guides the thinking away from, should we buy more servers for the holidays, towards how can we use public cloud elasticity strategically for just the peak weeks, paying only for that surge capacity. It enables smarter, more flexible planning.
For me, the most surprising thing revisiting this wasn't any single piece of tech, but just how profoundly that shift from CapEx to OpEx has revolutionized market dynamics. It enables a kind of instant global competition that just wasn't possible before. It really is an economic earthquake.
I completely agree. And Rupert Aurelius' book provides that solid mental model, let's call it cloud literacy, that you need to navigate this new landscape effectively. The final, maybe provocative, thought he leaves you with is this. In the cloud era, your biggest strategic advantage might not just be your technical skills, but how well you actively manage that shared security responsibility and control your consumption costs. Mastering that vigilance, that governance, that's becoming the essential mindset for success in this new world.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.